Good afternoon, everyone. Allison Scoburg here, Consolidated Planning Group. We are happy to be here with you today. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome. You're in the right place, and we are glad that you are here. If you have joined our webinars in the past, we're certainly glad that you are back with us. I always like to start by sharing a little housekeeping items today before we get started. We are in webinar mode today, which means that we can't see you or hear you, but as always, we do, we love your questions, and we invite you to put your questions in the chat box today. I'll be monitoring that. We'll be getting to as many as possible that we can during our time that we have together today, which is about an hour. So if you're planning your day, you can plan that we will be done within about an hour. So Consolidated Planning Group, we are a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We're nationally certified as Social Security advisors and members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. We help people plan for the future of a loved one with a disability. We help them put transition programs in place. We help them put lifetime care plans in place. We do a lot of advocacy by way of our webinars, which you may have heard. We have a Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel. There's over 400 webinars on that channel designed to help you and empower you as you're navigating things with your loved one with a disability. If you can think of the topic, it is probably out there. And it's not just always me talking. We partner with awesome professionals all the time that serve in the disability community. Oftentimes, as is the case today, we partner with organizations and people that that are in the disability community, but also they themselves, like me, have a loved one with a disability, so they eat, sleep, and breathe this both personally and professionally. So today, we are super excited to be here with you, and we're super excited to be chatting with Shayna Halverson of Empower Ed. She, as I mentioned a moment ago, she herself is a parent to a neurodiverse kiddo, and so she definitely gets this. And so we're going to be talking about special education. What is it anyway? Shayna has a broad background in both education and a legal background as well. So certified high school teacher, former attorney, and an executive function coach. So she gets this. So Shayna, this is our first time with you today. We're happy to be here with you. And having said that, I am going to turn it over to you. One last thing I want to mention to everybody is today's webinar is being recorded, and you will get a copy of today's slides, as well as a link to the recording in your email. And then as an added bonus, there are a couple of extra PDFs today of acronyms that are frequently thrown around in the special education community and what those acronyms mean. So that's an added bonus today. Shayna, welcome. Tell us a little bit more about you, and thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you, Allison. Are you going to be putting the slides up now, or are... Oh, I can't hear you.
Can you see the slides?
I can't see the slides. Sorry. Okay.
The slides are up. Somebody in the chat box, let us know if you can see the slides.
Maybe. Okay.
Okay, the slides are up. They can see them.
They can see them. Okay. Okay, I'm not sure why I can't see them. Sorry.
Let me try to share really quick, and I'll reshare it and see if that does the trick.
There we go. I see. Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that's me. Hi, everyone. I am Shayna Halverson. I'm a white 40-something woman with shoulder-length brown hair for anyone who might have visual impairments. As you can see, and as Allison has already stated, I wear a lot of different hats figuratively, not literally. I am currently a special education consultant and advocate and a council member for the Texas Council for Developmental Disabilities, an executive functioning and academic coach, former attorney, current activist, but most importantly, neurodiverse mom of two public school students, one who is a twice exceptional learner, and one is a student with both intellectual and developmental disabilities. So I've been through it all with my kids, and I'm on the other side, and now I work with families to help them navigate the system. Special education, what is it anyway? I'm sure you've all heard the word special education, but many of you may not understand exactly what those words mean. So today I'm going to go over some really broad areas in a Cliff Notes version, with the ultimate goal of you each leaving here with an aha moment. But I'm going to be taking it down to the basics. So I apologize if it's more review for some of you. I'm not sure what everyone's stage of the game is. I always like to manage expectations. So let's go over the agenda of what I'm planning to cover. I'm going to start with a short story that many of you may be able to relate to, followed by a mini history lesson on the history of special education rights. And then we will enjoy a condensed can of alphabet soup because we speak in acronyms. And as Allison has stated, I put together a pretty thorough list of the most common acronyms we use in special education that everyone will get with a copy of the slides after the presentation. And lastly, we have a few action items that I will leave you with. And I do have a couple check-ins for understanding sprinkled throughout the presentation, but please feel free to raise your hand or put any questions in the chat as they come up. Allison will be checking to let me know if anyone has any questions. Okay.
So now I just wanted to mention here, you know, I am reminded that we are starting the school year again, like it's a new school year, a fresh slate. And thinking back, now my kids have, you know, we're grown, we've gotten out of school, we've graduated and things like that. But thinking of the fresh school year and how important it is to get it right at the beginning of the year, you know, as far as getting supports and things in place for our kids. So I thank you for being here today to talk to us about this, because I feel like it's really, really timely. So whether your child is in public school or private school or whatever, the bottom line is getting it right or as close to right as possible early on is going to help their education, correct?
Yes, the sooner the better. And I will cover that. You are the best advocate for your kid. You know your kid better than anyone. And if you think that there is an area they're struggling, you don't want to wait for the school to come to you. You're gonna act as soon as possible. But I'm gonna get to that in the process. Oops, go back to the. Oh, though this is okay. Sorry, we are going to the short story is actually my own story of coming to Texas. Before moving to Houston, I lived in Boston, Massachusetts for 24 years, which is where both of my children were born, including my daughter, who was born with multiple disabilities. The laws there are very different and, dare I say, more parent-friendly and informative. I was basically handheld from the hospital to early intervention services, and then at 2.9 years old, early intervention team walked me over to the public school and taught me everything along the way. In 2015, when my daughter was halfway through the first grade, we moved to Texas, and I quickly found out that special education here, as it does in every state, operates under a very different model. In Texas, we use an educational model rather than a clinical-based model, which is what we had in Massachusetts. So many of the services that we had been receiving for my daughter in school were just not offered in the state. And as I dove into my research to learn how to get my daughter's needs met here, I began to realize that There were very few families in Houston who understood the special education process or how to help their children with known or suspected disabilities. So fast forward 8 years ago, or 8 years, and today I'm finally getting my daughter's needs met, but I can't even imagine where she would be if I hadn't known what to ask for. Everything is bigger in Texas, including the school districts. And while there are resources and trainings out there, you have to look for them. And even with my previous knowledge, I had to hire an advocate and learn how to navigate all new laws and procedures over many years before I figured it all out. It takes a village, so don't try it alone. If you know someone who's been through it, use them as a resource. And I actually do have a whole list of resources at the end of this presentation I'll share as well. Okay, so let's get back to my title. What is special education anyway? Special education is a service, not a place. And if there's anything I can hammer into your heads today, it's that. It's a service, not a place. It's not a small, dark room where students are sent to have their dreams crushed. It's a legally entitled right, and it was actually enacted to open doors for students, enabling them to reach their full potential. And here comes my mini history lesson. The legal right to special education services has only been around since the 1970s, which is not that long ago. And I know that because I've been around since the 1970s, and I'm not that old. In 1973, the Rehabilitation Act was enacted, and this is a civil rights law that includes Section 504. Section 504 is an anti-discrimination law that requires that the needs of students with disabilities be met as adequately as the needs of their non-disabled peers. Then in 1975, we got the Education of Handicapped Children Act, which is now called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or as some of you have probably heard, IDEA. That's how we refer to it most of the time. This established the right of children with disabilities to receive a free, appropriate public education, or FAPE, one of those acronyms that we'll be going over. Nope, go back one. There we go. Okay. What did these laws give us? They gave us 504 plans and IEPs, which stands for, oh, it looks like that slide cut off a little bit, individual education plans. They're different animals, and I'm sure this is an area of confusion for a lot of people. A 504 plan comes from the Rehabilitation Act. And if you remember, it's an anti-discrimination law. So it exists to prohibit discrimination against students with disabilities in any program that receives federal fundings, including public schools, institutions of higher education, and many government jobs and facilities, anyone who receives federal funding. So this will follow past 12th grade. It protects a student with a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. That's the definition. And in public schools, this law requires the school districts to provide a free, appropriate public education. So under a 504 plan, this means that a student will be provided reasonable accommodations to learning and school activities, including extracurricular activities, that allow students with disabilities to participate to the same extent as their non-disabled peers. It is based on individual need, and it can look like preferential seating, extra time, nurse care for, say, a student with diabetes, physical modifications, like accessible bathroom stalls, etc. A 504 plan is available to anyone with a disability. There is no evaluation required. There is a meeting and a plan that will be put in place, but it is not as much to the school's discretion as an IEP. So an IEP is an individual education plan, and this comes from the IDEA law, and it takes a student's rights even further. If a student is evaluated by the school district and found eligible, they have to be found eligible under one of the 13 recognized categories of disability, then the IDEA guarantees special education and related services in the form of an IEP. Students can be eligible for an IEP from ages 3 to 21 years old. Again, it is based on individual need, and an IEP includes all of the accommodations that you can get from a 504 plan, plus specially designed instructions that allow a student to access a free and appropriate public education according to each student's unique and individual needs. Here, under an IEP, the law, and this is only as of a few years ago, now requires a school to create a plan that is reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress, which is a lot of accountability for a school. And they have to show and collect data and show that that child is making progress along the way. That's not the case with a 504 plan. So there's a lot more accountability and data and ability to track progress with an IEP. Things that you can get here are you can have academic goals, you can have occupational therapy, speech therapy, transportation, functional goals, counseling. There's whatever the student needs in order to be successful and access their education and make progress.
So I have a question. 504 versus an IEP, one might argue that an IEP is quote unquote better. So if I'm a parent and I'm, looking at resources for my loved one and their education, why would I want a 504 versus an IEP, or a 504 only for people that don't qualify for an IEP? Could you kind of break that down for me? Because it seems like there's a lot more services under an IEP and a lot more directional capacity for the student and their learning needs. So why would I have a 504?
I can actually answer that with my own personal example of my two children. I have, as I said, my daughter has multiple intellectual and developmental disabilities, and she needs an IEP to access across the board her education. We had to create specially designed instruction. She receives occupational therapy, speech language services. She cannot access the standard curriculum even with her learning disabilities. So she needs to have every class modified and accommodated to the way she learns, versus my son, who has ADHD, but he's also a gifted, talented student who has areas of need that don't require specially designed instruction. So the accommodations he can get with a 504 plan are things that will help him access his education, such as preferential seating in the front of the classroom where he's less distracted, extra time on tests. If he needs to take a test in a smaller setting where there's less noise and distractions for him to be able to focus, he can access the curriculum and his needs are met as long as he has those distractions limited for him. So he doesn't need a full IEP or progress monitoring. He just needs those accommodations. And every kid is different. And that's the idea of special education services, period, is that you should be meeting every student's individualized needs. So some just need accommodations, some need more. And depending on the student.
So I just have a quick question before we move on to the next slide. Is it possible in a 504 plan? I know that you can get therapy coming in, OT, PT, speech therapists, and various things. And I know that in the IEP. But is that possible in a 504 plan or not?
You can get, those are related services, and you can get indirectly if a child needs, I do not believe that you can get direct services where there's progress monitoring under a 504 plan. But if a child needs occupational therapy help, they will work with the teacher who then works with the student in the classroom. If that makes sense. In Texas, yeah. It's not a direct service.
Thank you for that. We'll move on to the next slide. This is a great
explanation. One more thing, 504 plan, though, you can use those in college as well. IEPs end when you graduate from high school at 21 or 21 years old. They follow you till you're 21. As long as you are in high school, you can continue up to 21 years. But and a 504 plan can be used in an institution of higher learning or anywhere that receives federal funds. So it's a little learning, teaching a child how to self-advocate for their needs under a 504 plan will follow them for life.
And I would also say on the IEPs, and while they don't transfer to higher education, and we do make a point of indicating that to families who have kids that are transitioning into higher education, they will look at them, and you can often, all of these schools have offices of disability, and you can apply for accommodations. They all have the way that you have to, the door you have to walk through to apply for accommodations. But I found with my own kids that they do take into consideration the information in that IEP and the offices of disability. They're not all created equally, but the ones we worked with were pretty wonderful in implementing the services that we needed. But it is important to know. I'm so glad you brought that up, Shayna, because everything doesn't always just transfer. Like you said, the IEP, you can't just assume that you're going to get those. You just like everything else we do as parents, that we have to beg, borrow, steal, and over around it through and jump through 17 hoops to get what we need. It's the same thing with higher education, getting those. It's not terrible, but getting the necessary supports in place for your student, it is important, and planning early for that is definitely important.
Yes, planning early, the theme of the day. Okay, so a quick check for understanding. I just want to make sure everybody's on following along. If you can want to look at my question and put your answer in the chat, we'll make sure everybody's on the same page. If my student has been diagnosed with ADHD by a medical professional, what is the student eligible for, a 504 plan or an IEP? Or it depends. And it looks like, let me see if I, looks like everybody's putting it depends, which is, let's go to the next slide. Allison, you want to go to the next slide? No.
Are you seeing that?
Oh, yes, I see it. Now I see it. Sorry. I think there was a lag. Yes, it depends was the correct answer, because the medical diagnosis, as I was stating with my son, will automatically allow the student to access a 504 plan accommodations that enables them to access their education to the same extent as their disabled peers, which could be preferential seating, extended time on tests, etc. They may be entitled to an IEP if they are found eligible for special education services under one of the categories, those 13 categories I mentioned. One is called other health impairment, or OHI, which would require a school evaluation to find them eligible under that category, but that they could additionally be entitled to an IEP with an ADHD diagnosis, but it requires more than just the medical diagnosis. It requires a school evaluation and eligibility.
Is there any reason not to start with a 504? To see how it goes and then upgrade to an IEP, unless there's a definitive, like you said, that your daughter needs everything modified. She can't do traditional curriculum, so you know that she needs the IEP. But is a 504 in place without, you know, because sometimes it takes time to get those evaluations scheduled. So are you better to have a 504 in the meantime while you're getting
there?
Oh,
I always, if you're requesting an evaluation, you definitely, I always suggest getting a 504 plan in place. You may not need an IEP for a student who has ADHD. I mean, it depends on the student's needs, obviously. But if you think they need more than just the 504, I would at a minimum get that 504 put into place during the evaluation process. Because yes, it can take up to almost, I think it's almost 100 days, but if you count in weekends with the timelines. So,
can you give me some examples of OHI? It's such a term and they really use it, but like, what is that? Is that a kid that maybe they're not autistic, they don't have ADHD, but maybe they're dyslexic? Or is this a kid that limps and shouldn't do gym? I mean, like, what is OHI anyway? It seems like such a broad term to me.
It is a broad term, and I think it was meant to encompass anything that wasn't a specific learning disability. Dyslexia is considered a specific learning disability, finally. But if a student is and it gets tricky because of I don't know all of the definitions of how the diagnosticians in different school districts will make those determinations. But if a student has a need for more than just accommodations in order to access, so they need specially designed instruction in anything, and that could be adaptive PE, that could be, you know, if it was a physical disability, I think that it would fit under those categories. But it has to be an educational need that isn't a specific learning disability, if that makes sense.
For sure.
There's specific language that has to be and criteria that have to be met, but I'm not a diagnostician, so I don't
sure.
know all that's off the top of my head.
So this slide, I'm so glad that you have a slide on this, public versus private, because, you know, when you were talking about these accommodations, one thing that I'm reminded of is that private schools operate completely differently than a public school. And while there are many, many, and we've done like webinars on private schools that serve individuals with disabilities, and we've kind of done, you know, kind of speed dating webinars with these organizations, but the private schools don't necessarily have to follow the same guidelines, huh?
No, they don't. These, the rights, your right to a special education service is only available at a public school. You may be able to get 504 accommodations at a private school if they receive federal funds. That would require them to follow Section 504. But in general, there are no rights to special education services in private schools. They're expensive. They sometimes allow for 504 accommodations, but I just want for any parents out there who are thinking of pulling their kids out of public school for private when they're not getting their needs met. I just want I see all the time that, especially in Houston, many of these private schools that service children with learning disabilities are very niche, and they work with students who have specific needs. But they may not be willing to work with a student who manifests multiple disabilities or behaviors over time. And as many of you probably know, a lot of these things are comorbid, and you get not just one, but you get a bunch of things together. So, for instance, if you have your child at a school that's known for working with students with dyslexia or speech and language disabilities, and they suddenly manifest a behavior, you may be asked to leave, and there's nothing you can do. You have no rights. You paid money. They say, we no longer want your money. You have given up those rights and those protections for your student. And many times it's without a refund. I've had lots of clients who come to me and they're just out of that tuition, and now they have to start back over at public school. But at public school, you have both federal and state rights to those special education services. I this is something that is one of it, I wish there was a way to, wave a wand and get rid of the stigma when it comes to the label of special education. Special education scares so many parents, and there are actually magic words that open doors to services and opportunities for kids. And I want everyone to think of them not as labels. You're not labeling your kid in school. It's a magic word. They are going to open the door, and your child is going to be the same child with or without the label, but they need those words to get the services in school. So, if a teacher or a friend or family member comes to you and says they have a reason to believe that your child could benefit from these, don't be afraid. Embrace that label. At public school.
I think, Shayna, that a lot of times, as parents born in the 70s or the 60s or even the 50s, and how those labels were back in the day, we have this negative thought of that in our minds. And so I think sometimes as parents, you want the best for your kid, but sometimes parents are avoiding those labels. And I kind of say this isn't your, when you were a kid, special education that it's different. It is different in a lot of ways. There are a lot of inclusion. There's a lot of inclusion where there was like, it was exclusion when we were kids. That's what it was. You were, alienated, like you talked about earlier before. So I think understanding that it is different, and just because a person has an IEP does not mean that they're in a contained classroom. That doesn't mean that at all anymore. So I think it's important to understand that. I'm glad you mentioned that. We actually have a question. What if my son has an IEP for SLD, but they don't accept that he has autism based on the school evaluation, but I have a medical evaluation that basically says he does have autism. They put this in a 504 for autism, and she has a question mark. So basically, what if you have a medical diagnosis that disagrees with the school's evaluation? What do you do in that example?
So, and this happens a lot in the school districts of around the Houston area, where the medical and educational eligibility for autism don't match. So you've got a doctor saying, yes, your child is on the autism spectrum, but then the school says, and this happens with dyslexia a lot too, the school says, no, they don't meet the eligibility. If your child already has an SLD, that stands for a specific learning disability, then they should, it sounds like they're probably qualifying automatically for under that for the IEP. I usually just, rather than fighting the school on the eligibility, if you're already in the door and you only need one foot in the door to access all of the needs that your child has. In the state of Texas, we have something called an autism supplement, and it's required. There are areas, the autism supplement has, it's either 11 or 13, now I'm blanking because I've been talking about 13 categories of eligibility. It's either 11 or 13 areas that are required to be discussed in an ARD meeting if your child meets the eligibility of autism. And there are things that are home service communications based areas of need to look at and determine whether or not your child needs them. I usually tell people to print off that autism supplement, and if the school refuses to give you the eligibility, they still have to build an IEP that meets every one of your students' needs. So if they don't want to call it autism, they still will have to meet all of the needs. So go through the supplement. Just don't call it autism and say, okay, well, my child needs these communication skills worked on. My child needs these in-home services. Go through all of those areas on the supplement as if they are just, requests for areas that your child needs built into their IEP, and you're not calling it autism. You can still get all the services.
So I think what I hear you saying is that basically, if they can get the services that they need without, you know, the label, to have the label or not have the label, it's okay. It's a matter of getting the services that they need. And the person says, but can I request that they put the records in the 504? Can you request that the outside records are included, or are by law they have to do their own assessments?
They have to, and you're saying 504, but if they have a specific learning disability, they should be eligible for an IEP. So you can have them included. They don't have to accept them as an educational need, because if they do their own testing, any outside testing has to be accepted by the full ARD committee. And if the school then does their own testing and it's different, and they say, okay, you know, the diagnosis of autism doesn't affect them at school, that's how they determine eligibility. It has to affect their ability to access their education. And
well,
that's
the truth is that the testing in the school is covered by the school. And if you have private testing, then you're basically paying out of pocket for that. And that's a choice as a parent. I chose to do both because I wanted to see if things matched. And if things didn't match, then I definitely wanted my kids to get the services that they needed. You know, for any other underlying diagnoses. So I think that there is value in outside assessments, but they are also expensive. So, and oftentimes, sometimes every once in a blue moon, if the assessment is needed because there is a different underlying diagnosis that causes cognitive decline, like chemo brain or something like that, then they might be covered. But a lot of times these outside assessments are relatively expensive.
So I usually tell parents, if they haven't done it yet, if they're in the school system, to wait, because if you do an outside assessment on your own dime, the school will then be required to do their own assessment, and it may or may not be the same. If you wait for them to do it first and you don't agree with their result, you can ask them to pay for an outside assessment after the fact.
That's great advice.
That's called an IEE, independent educational evaluation. So the school's always going to have to do their own. If you come into the school and you've already got that psycho evaluation, you know, the psychoed eval that was done before the student started public school, then, you know, it's already done and they're still going to conduct their own. But you can always, after the fact, ask them to pay for an additional outside testing because you want a medical professional involved as well.
And some of the testing is suggested that they don't do it again for 2 years or 3 years. It depends on what test and what assessment and evaluation that they're doing, because they don't, there's some of them that they don't like to see repeated back to back, like looking for a different result. So thank you for answering that. So I've got the alphabet soup pulled up, and wow, yes. So many acronyms. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and I apologize. On my slide deck, I can click each thing to come in one at a time. So I know this looks like a lot. This is kind of a, and you can write these down, but you will also be getting the slides and you'll be getting a whole list of acronyms. So this is just kind of like the getting started. If you are starting with a student who you know or suspect has a disability in the school. So there are two ways that you will kind of could enter the special education services world. One is that the school recognizes that something is going on and they use an RTI, or response to interventions, in a multi-tiered system of supports, MTSS. And this is usually before they ever even speak to a parent. So you could have a kindergartner who a teacher thinks is struggling. And so they start trying different scaffolding techniques within the classroom to see if they can get the child on track without resorting to more accommodations or a 504 plan or going through a full evaluation. So it can take a long time. And it, as we said at the beginning of this webinar, getting started as early as possible is key. Because these evaluations and the process takes a really long time. And you can, especially at early elementary age, time is precious and they can fall really far behind really quickly if you don't have the right supports and accommodations in place. So I suggest going to the path on the right, and do the asking yourself. If you think your child has a disability that's affecting their ability to receive an appropriate education, you have to ask for an evaluation, a full individual evaluation, or FIE. And that will be an evaluation that looks at all suspected areas of disability, those 13 areas of eligibility that we discussed at the beginning.
And this
must request it in writing. Writing.
That's what I was going to say. This is not around the
water
cooler.
This is not in the bus line.
At the door of the classroom. It's in writing.
In writing, and you want to send it to your teacher and the administrator. Because
this email is okay, right?
Email's fine as long as it's in writing. If it's not in writing, it doesn't happen. It has to. Sure. There has to be a paper trail. So.
And then I think the key, Shayna, what I'm thinking about here is right now, here we are, mid-August, and because you said it could be like up to 100 days, like, look, it needs to get in now. So ideally, you can have this assessment before Christmas break. And then, you know, we can get, so it's a process and it can be slow. But then waiting even a few weeks, it takes you past Christmas, and then you get the results back, and then they can implement this. And then before you know it, it's end of grade testing and spring break and everything else. It goes by quick, and then the summer is here. So I think that is the key. And then I think further also, it's that there is a lot of students that need accommodations, an IEP or a full individual evaluation. And there's only so many DIAGs, and a lot of the DIAGs shadow at multiple schools. They may be at many schools in the district in 2 and 3. And so they're not even at your school every day. So that's part of that as well.
Yes, these are district resources, not campus resources. So they're shared throughout. And depending on the size of your district, there are not many and they have a lot of schools to get around to. And there are some really big school districts in Texas. So you put it in writing, you request that full individual evaluation, and then there are one of two things that will happen. If a school does an evaluation and they say your child is not eligible for special education, they have to put it in writing, and it's called a prior written notice, and they have to give you specific reasons why they found your child not eligible. And there are further steps that you can take to dispute this. Like I said, you can always request for an outside evaluation that the school there. There's more. This is the basics. But once you suspect your child has a disability, don't wait for the school. Request the FIE, and if they tell you no, you have other options. But if they tell you yes, your child has been found eligible for special education, the next step is that they hold what's called an admission review dismissal meeting, an ARD meeting, ARD. This is a committee made up of representatives of every part of the child's education. There are specific individuals who are required to be part of the committee, but you are the most important person because you will be there for your child's entire educational journey. While teachers, administrators are going to come and go along the way, you're there from the beginning to the end. So you are the most important person in this room. And it's very intimidating when you walk into that room with 12 other administrators and educators sitting around a table, and you feel like you're not as important as them because you're not in the classroom, but you are actually the most important person at that table. So remember that. And your decision, they can't do anything without your okay. So you need them, but they need you. So don't get intimidated when you sit at that table. You will sit at that table, and they will together. You and the ARD committee will then create your child's individualized education plan. You draft a document. It is a contract. It's a living contract. It will change as your students' needs change over time. If nothing is set in stone, if it doesn't work, you come back to the table, you try different things. It takes time because you have to get all these people together and put these goals and objectives into place, but it's a contract between the family and the school. You will create present levels of where your child is now and goals for the year and goals for the future. And you will have specially designed instruction, SDI, that will ensure that your child has access to a free, appropriate public education that meets their individualized needs. So that's like the very basics of getting from a suspected disability to having an IEP plan in place. There are a lot of other moving pieces, but
I have a question for families that may be on here. I mean, we've got families from all over and different ages of their kids. Maybe it's a new diagnosis. Maybe we have families on here that are starting the public school system for the first time. And maybe some families are evaluating private school and public school, and they would like to know what accommodations their kindergartner is going to get. Can you request an evaluation prior to starting school? Do you have to wait till the kindergartner actually starts school? Tell us what we could do on that. Because I mean, to me, as a parent with struggling learners, I want to know first if
Yeah,
I'm going to enroll them in your school or not, and what you're going to do for them. I already know they need help. So, what can you do with that?
you can request that evaluation at 2.9 years old, because the second your child turns 3 years old, they are entitled to a special education service at their public school. And that is preschool at they just changed the name. It's ECSE, Early Childhood Special Education Services here in Texas, at 3 years old. So you can get those evaluations. You can get those evaluations done even if you're at a private school. You know, they'll come into the daycare. They'll come into, if even if your child is a kindergartner at a private school, you can have the evaluation done, find out what they're entitled to, and then determine if you want to make that switch over to public school.
And that ECSI, that it used to be, they may have changed the name, but it used to be like early childhood intervention. You can get more information about that at your local authority. In Houston, it's going to be the Harris Center. In Fort Bend County, it's going to be Texana. We have a list of the local intellectual disability authorities. You can type in Texas local intellectual disability authorities.
That's before three.
Before three.
So three, ECSE is through your public school district. Before three would be early childhood intervention. So ECSE, okay. Yes, was PP. What was it? Somebody just put it in the chat of what it used to be called. It disappeared for me.
Oh, PPCD. Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah. And again, it's like we have enough acronyms, but then we got to change them up anyway, just to throw people for, throw people for a loop. So that is good. And that is encouraging. And so if you're planning early, you know, we meet with families all across the way. We've got ones that are transitioning. We've got ones that are reeling from a new diagnosis, but this is where that planning early, comes into play. And I do love that. That you don't have to wonder, you don't have to put them in that public school and wait and see what kind of help or supports that they're going to get. You can start advocating early. So I do love that.
Okay, another quick check for understanding. I think I already answered this, but we'll see who was paying attention. If I think my student is struggling in school and that it may be due to a learning difference, I should A, wait for the school to let me know if they see something, B, mention at teacher conference that I have some concerns, or C, put my concerns in writing and send to both teacher and principal of school. And I already see lots and lots of C's coming in. Yes, the answer is C, put the concerns in writing, because if it's not in writing, it didn't happen. And as I said here, the school is under a legal obligation under what's called child find to make sure that children are identified and evaluated for any learning disabilities when needed. But in reality, the children, students are falling through the cracks daily, and you know your student better than anyone. So don't wait. Time is precious. And if it's not in writing, it didn't happen. So yes, put it in writing, request that evaluation, send it, emails fine, to the teacher and the principal of the school.
I do have a quick question, because, you know, some things are super apparent, you know, if a child has an intellectual disability, but sometimes things aren't as apparent. And sometimes, you know, kids are tricky and they don't come with a manual, I always say, but like sometimes there might be behaviors. There might be behaviors and acting out in school because they're struggling to read or they're struggling to understand, or they may have processing speed delays or working memory issues. Maybe they don't have an intellectual disability, but they have those processing speed delays and working memory issues. And then it starts manifesting as out of character behaviors and things like that. Are those signs that maybe you should request an evaluation? Any tell us about changes or things that should be a cue as a parent, because since they don't have a manual, that maybe we should consider an evaluation.
Well, I mean, I do think that every parent knows their child, and that mommy gut is so important. It's pretty much always right, in my experience. I do think that the behaviors in my experience are forms of communication. I mean, those are, your child doesn't have the words to tell you that they're struggling, and so they are going to knock all the books on the desk, off the desk, because they can't understand what's happening in the classroom, but they don't have the communication, the language skills developed enough to understand that maybe, or communicate that. So they act out. And it's a form of communication, and it's something that you should listen to. You know, figure out, you know your kid better than anyone, and you know if this is something you don't see at home, or is new, or I mean, I think that especially this time of year, if things start manifesting, it's probably a sign that it's school related, because if you haven't seen it all summer when you were with your kid 24/7 and suddenly they're in school and you're seeing it, you know, I mean.
I remember Vivian Schutte from Brookwood mentioning that sometimes those behaviors are an unmet need. And that's not a hit towards a parent, meaning that you're not meeting your kid's needs, but it's an unmet need that maybe they can't articulate the way that we would. But getting to the root of what that unmet need is, and if it has to do with accommodations that are necessary in school, a lot of times those things can be made to go away. The thing is there's so many social components at school, and there's so many, you know, it starts, I always jokingly say it starts like when you have a baby, and it's like, you know, well, when do they sit up, and when do they talk, and when do they walk, and when are you going to have another one? It's like always, it's always this comparison. And then we live in the social media age and the comparison of other kids. But, you know, really just, I think for me, it was a matter of meeting your child where they are and not looking around to see what everybody else's kid is doing, and getting the help and services that we needed for my kids to be the best kids that they could be, and thrive in an educational environment. So, you know, I think that is part of it. But these kids feel this pressure, and it starts in preschool and kindergarten, who's in dance and who's in soccer, and who, like, you know, it starts early, and they feel a lot of social pressure even in kindergarten.
And those needs, those unmet needs, I mean, your kid may not have experienced some of this stuff before. Like, maybe they're sensitive to the fluorescent lighting in a classroom, or even the temperature. I mean, they could have sensory needs that they've never experienced in another setting until they go into that classroom setting, and suddenly it's setting them off. So yeah, I definitely think it's, pay attention when your child starts doing things that are out of the ordinary. Trust your mommy gut. Okay, so now what? Just a couple, you know, things to leave with. Ask questions. Unfortunately, the educators and administrators do this so often that they forget that the parents are starting at zero a lot of these times. So when you're sitting at that R table, remember that you're the most important person in your child's journey, their educational journey, because you're there the whole time. So if you don't understand something, then ask them to explain it. Embrace the label. Like I said, we're at the 50-year point with these protections and rights in place. So only the second generation of teachers since they were formed, but we can be the parents who make those words special education common understanding instead of an unknown stigma. Hold tight to your rights. Every parent here is obviously invested in their students' education, or you wouldn't have taken the time to come. So hold on to those legally entitled rights. And the more of us that do, the stronger they become. Teach your kids and talk to them about learning differences. They're so much more aware and accepting in today's generation, these alpha generation, I think, is who's up and coming now, than we were. And you'll be surprised at how much they share about what's going on at school. And then let's change the world for them. If we teach our kids about their rights when they are young, the rights that people with disabilities and their loved ones fought really hard to put into place, then our children grow up to be strong self-advocates who let nothing stand in their way. And no one will be able to tell them what they can and can't do, or what, if they want to do it for the rest of their lives.
I love that so much. And that is so, so important. And the things that you do early on, I mean, I can look back, and those things that you do early on absolutely do make a difference. And they are listening to you, and they are hearing things. And so, you know, I think back of the, I've always called it the relentless pursuit of information, of, you know, parents with a loved one with a disability were relentlessly pursuing how to help them, not how to change them, but how to get them the tools and resources that they need to be successful in life. And it's not just successful at school, it's successful with friends or relationships. It's so many things. And but I do agree that self-advocacy piece is a huge thing. So we've got some resources on the screen. We're running out of time for today, but we are going to send out these slides, and these are some great websites. Let me go back to that and went ahead. Some great websites where you can get support. There are lots of organizations that support individuals with disabilities in the state of Texas, all throughout the United States. And you get in some of these rural areas, it is a little bit more difficult to have, you know, some of the resources that are available in some of the bigger cities. But there are lots of resources out there, and you'll see a lot of these on our YouTube channel as well. So you guys have attended today because this is near and dear to your heart. As you think about kind of where you are in your journey, you know, with your student, if you need help, you can reach out to Empower Ed, Sheena Halverson, and reach out to her directly to learn more about her services and how she may be able to help you. You know, special education is something that you can navigate yourself. It is a little bit more difficult if you don't know the laws and the rules. There is help and information out there for you, but some families want to partner with somebody that has it backwards and forwards, and they know what the deal is and can provide some guidance in getting it right the first time. Or maybe you didn't get it right the first time, but you need to back up and punt to get it right going forward. Wherever you are, feel free to reach out to Sheena. And I always know in the time that we have together, not all everyone asked the question that they wanted to ask because it was too private or too personal, or we ran out of time. Feel free to reach out to Sheena by email or phone and ask those questions, and she'll be able to help you as well. In our slides, you're going to get a link to any upcoming webinars that we have. So you'll want to check out those titles. We work on a collaborative team here at CPG, and we stand ready to help you plan for the future of your loved one with a disability. We always offer free personalized consultations, and this QR code here on the screen will take you to our calendar where you can book your free consultation. So it's certainly been my pleasure. Let me get Shayna's contact information back up here on the screen. And again, you guys will be receiving an email with a copy of today's slides, a link to the recording, the two PDFs with the acronym list, and all of Shayna's contact information. Certainly been my pleasure, and Shayna, we'll look forward to partnering with you again.
Great. Thank you so much, Allison.
And take care. Bye now.
Bye.